Welcome to Hashtag Finance Master, a weekly show where Anders Leo Lindberg discusses the latest trends in finance and accounting with a global audience via LinkedIn audio. Recorded live, anyone can tune in and take part. Just raise your hand and share the stage. Will you join Anders next time? For now, kick back, relax, and enjoy this week's show.
Welcome everyone to this special episode of the Hashtag Finance Master podcast. Today I have another guest joining me who is a longtime data analytics and finance leader and has lots of great insight, has worked from some iconic companies, and I'm really excited to hear from these practitioners how they are experiencing how data analytics can create value in companies and how the collaboration is between finance and data analytics. I think the great thing about today's guest is that she has experiences both in data analytics and from finance. So Rose, welcome to the show. So great to have you here. Could you please just give a quick introduction of yourself and then we'll hear much more about your story.
Thank you, Anders. Great to be here and chat with you and your community. My name is Rose Pankunas. I'm very much a curious generalist, I'd say, very much interested in all aspects of business. I actually started out very early on, had an internship in software development, thought I was going to be an engineer, shifted to be more quantitative, did more statistical things, and actually got into finance via the route of analytics. So I had spent a few years in data science and analytics, and we'll get into this, but my role at Uber, which was a very quantitative role, was actually housed within finance. And so that's how I got exposed to accounting and all the fascinating things in the world of finance. And that's the last year and a half, I've actually decided to start my own company building software to help finance teams. So that's a quick overview of my background.
Very interesting. And I find that lots of data analytics people, they start out in engineering and then maybe they find that the very technical aspects of building stuff in engineering or building software, for instance, maybe is, I don't know, and maybe you can add to this, Rose, but maybe it's too technical and then you go down a more generalist route. But it seems like many of them are coming from this kind of engineering background or at least have dipped their toes into that pool. And then they find out that maybe it's something different that they need to do. But on that note, I mean, tell our listeners about your background story. You've worked in some fascinating companies and also a smaller company. So let's hear more about it. What's your story all about?
So like you said, I think I did start off thinking I would be a little bit more of a pure software engineer. I think what got me was just the curiosity and the interest into economics, to business, and the almost like the human factor of it, right? And how humans with rational or irrational decisions can actually have big impacts on the product and on the business. And so after undergrad, I actually thought I was going to pursue a PhD and worked with an economics professor. And that's what got me out to Silicon Valley. I spent 2 years at Stanford thinking I was going to do the PhD route, but again, really had that itch to be more practical, if you will, and help teams make decisions and execute. So got my MBA. And after that, landed in the iTunes analytics group. That was just a job posting I had applied to during my MBA. And it was an interesting time where iTunes was just shifting from being music only to having other content like TV, movies, global digitization, and really taking that opportunity to think about how iTunes and Apple Media is business beyond just music. So that was my first, I would say, formal introduction into the analytics role. It was pretty early on in those days, over a decade ago.
Very interesting. Also fascinating that it's just a job post and I applied to it and then you get the role.
Yep.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
You always think like there's sort of a very stringent process to go through and you have to know 10 people, but not necessarily. So great to hear about that. You talked a bit about it, but how did you first take an interest in data analytics? I mean, you're in the iTunes teams, but was it something you picked up before or was it something you picked up while you had that first role there?
Yeah. So when I was doing the economic research out of undergrad, there were large data sets I was already procuring, cleaning up the data and trying to run some regressions and analyses off of that data. And what I found attractive about this iTunes role was it wasn't government data. It wasn't general public data. It was actually very proprietary data. Think about every app you download on your iPhone, iPad, any iOS device, and then any content you purchase, you view. So I was just fascinated by the behavioral aspects of that data and how you could translate that to inform product decisions, inform content decisions as well. And so in that role, I would say that the tech stack that's used in academic research is a bit different than what's used in commercial aspects of data science and analytics. And even then, if you were to draw an analogy, I was probably using the Yahoo version of data analytics tools compared to the search and all the power of even Web3 today and the internet. So really early tooling as well on data analytics. But I was really drawn to the impact it could have for the business and for people on our products.
Very fascinating as well, right? And it's really that decision-making and the behavioral aspect of everything where when you think about data analytics, you're thinking about a ton of data and the regression yourself, regression analysis, and you know, all these statistical methods, and you're really deep diving into it. But pulling yourself out of it and thinking about, well, there are humans that are behaving to create this data, and there are humans that need to make decisions based on this data. How do you manage to balance those two things in terms of both deep diving into these vast data sets and thinking, well, I need to make it ready for kind of decision-making at the end of the day? How do you balance that?
Yeah, and I think this is important for anyone in data analytics, whether you're formally in that role or not. It's just really understanding the objective of that search, right? I think previously you've chatted about, like, there's so much data out there, it's searching for a needle in a haystack, but first you have to know what the needle even looks like, right? Yeah. So the idea, whether you're answering a question for product, whether you're answering a question for the CEO, whether you're answering a question for the CFO, really understanding the objective of the question and what decision is being made. I think that helps the people doing the work decide a couple of things. One is just how robust does this analysis need to be? Is it like, hey, the company is going in this general direction, or do I actually need to go down to the customer level and get a cohort of customers that this experiment is going to be applied to? So understanding the objective really help you set your priorities and how you go about your analysis and how you go about what conclusions or what pieces of data you share to the broader audience as well.
Yeah, I think this is really important. So I was at a conference some months back, and we had one of the leading management thinkers of the world, Roger Martin, on stage. He just published a new book called The New Way to Think. Mm-hmm. And in that book, he takes a shot at different kind of models that he's basically asking, is the model owning you? Are you owning the model? And one of the things he was taking a shot at was data science, because he was saying, well, data science is a hot career path today. Everyone wants to get into it, and I can just be a data scientist and I'm set for life. But he was more saying that what people tend to forget is that if I don't have a hypothesis around what needs to be true for this decision to be good or about a particular root cause, all I'm doing is just analyzing stuff and never getting anywhere. So I think what exactly you're talking about, Rose, is that if you cannot both balance between pulling yourself up and understanding what is the decision we're trying to make, while also having the technical skills to deep dive into the numbers or have someone on your team that's able to do it, then you're not really getting anywhere. You're analyzing, but you're not producing any outcomes. So I think that was really, of course, I come from the finance side, so I haven't worked in a data analytics team, and probably I don't have the skills for it either, but it was really profound insight for me to say, that's actually interesting. If we can bring that aspect to the world of data analytics, I'm sure a lot more value can actually be coming from those teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where the business partnering works, right? Like, you're communicating the objectives of both sides together.
So in your experience, how do the data analytics teams, how do they create value in a company from your perspective?
Flip side of that is, how don't they create value in a company, right? Yeah. I feel like there's so many ways that data science and analytics teams can create value. So I'll give you a quick anecdote and then I'll broaden it out. So Apple, when I was there, this is the time when a lot of video content was still distributed via DVD, even some Blu-ray, very physical aspects. And the revenue for those teams came from partnerships with, at least in the US, like Walmart, Target, these big physical retailers. It was not through a digital channel. And so for them to put content on iTunes was actually risking some partnership and some revenue from the other partnership stream, right? So as part of the iTunes analytics team, we actually packaged together some analysis for them to show them the potential of their sales on the iTunes platform and how over X period of time, that would actually be multiples of the physical revenue stream that they had. And that type of analysis then led to other creativity. My fun story is when the latest Harry Potter video came out, the iTunes teams proposed to Warner to do a Harry Potter bundle. Digitally, you can bundle all the videos together very easily. All the video assets are right there. Like, tomorrow you could launch it on the store. But they were really hesitant to do that because they couldn't ship a physical DVD box set to any of their partners for months. And so it took us a few weeks actually to convince them that this incremental amount of revenue that was zero cost really to them would really, first of all, that the wave of people consuming videos digitally, that was a trend, again, supported by data analytics. And also the fact that they would immediately see this revenue pop that would, you know, trump any other revenue stream later on. And they can still supply a physical box set later on. It didn't, you know, prohibit them from doing that. But that's what ultimately got them over the hump and using data to make businesses there.
That's such a great example. And I can only imagine how, for instance, Netflix have done that same kind of analysis, right? Flipping from the physical DVDs to actually just doing it virtually. And obviously today, no one would think twice about only consuming content digitally, right? But that was the journey. And and of course, it's difficult to, let's say, convince companies to do something which probably felt for them like radically differently with just a gut feeling. But if you can use data analytics to actually show, well, we see trends and patterns and consumer behavior that actually supports making this shift, it probably still feels uncomfortable for them to make the decision, but at least you're having a more data-backed decision. So this is a great example of how data analytics teams can create value in their company. So Rose, I mean, you mentioned you worked at Apple, you also worked at Uber and some of the data analytics teams there. And, you know, many people are always dying to know what is it like to work for these companies. But more specifically from my side, what's it like to work in the data analytics teams in these companies? Can you maybe shed a bit more light on how was that and how did it work and so on?
Yeah, and I'll say every organization is a little bit different, especially as this profession of analytics and data science is really maturing past decade and then into the next decade. Anecdotally, I'll share my experience at Uber. When I joined Uber in 2013, there was a data team and there were data scientists on it. It was more on the engineering side. And so surge pricing had some branding around that, but surge pricing was just getting going, but it was very macro. So it was at a whole city level, whether the whole city was surging or not. And as you can imagine, that needed to get much more granular down to the neighborhood, down to a few blocks to really get the pricing precision there. So in large part at Uber, there were two sets of data teams. One was for product and analytics there. And then what I actually started was the finance data science team. And so the objectives for these teams are also quite different. So my anecdote on the finance side, we were trying to forecast literally like billions of trips and billions of movements within the whole globe and trying to capture that in our financial model, right? With variable pricing. It's almost like this usage-based pricing for every single trip that's happening. And that's just, that granularity is very difficult to do in Excel with the resources. Not that the people can do it, but just with the resources, with the tooling. So I had the opportunity to hire a data science team to help essentially forecast metrics that investors would care about, right? Like how fast you were growing and how much you would need to burn to get to that level. And that macro forecast then drove a lot of the budget and decisions in different parts of the company, whether it's hiring engineering or spending on marketing and promotions. So there was one set of data science and analytics more focused on the finance. And then the team was much bigger on product and engineering, but decisions they would be making there, for example, Uber is a two-sided marketplace. You have a sign-up flow for riders. The first time rider, you go in, you sign up for the app, you put your credit card in. You also have a sign-up flow for drivers. How do drivers get a platform? What sort of documentation do they need? What sort of regulations do they need to follow? And if you don't have drivers, then you can't get revenue and do trips. So there was a lot of analytics done on the signup flow and how do we increase conversion at every step of the driver signup and where are we losing drivers? And that was all very data driven. So that was one example of product analytics. And the third example I'll show you is more on the pure data science side, where as we were calculating pricing, every time you look at the Uber app, you get a price that's based on the location, the time of day, all these things. So how do you have a model, essentially, that's a quantitative model, but then convert that to engineering and make sure you have the right data inputs and outputs within seconds or fractions of a second? As a rider, you can't open the app and like 2 minutes later, Uber gives you a price. You have to calculate that number very quickly. So what are the trade-offs in that model you have to make to be able to have that number surface? So those are three general groups of product science, of product analytics and data science at the company house. And I think every company, depending on what your objectives are, who your customers are, might have some variation of that.
such fascinating examples, all of them, and also just shedding light on the differences in analytics that, for instance, a finance team would do, which could still be very much business driven and driving towards making the best possible business decisions versus a much more, let's say, operational decision making, where you say, well, finance can have an opinion about how we should price as a company, but then someone needs to translate that into a very operational engineering algorithm or however it works. And again, I'm not an expert in this, but finance, for instance, you know, where I come, wouldn't really be involved in the details of how exactly do we do that. But we need to sort of agree on how do we overall want to price as a company. So it's really fascinating to hear these different examples, Rose, of how data science analytics can work in the different parts of the company. Because obviously, I mean, the overall topic that I've been discussing for the past 2 months almost now is like the finance versus data analytics, where my start hypothesis was that finance should really, at least organizationally, own the data analytics because we should own the numbers and everything that goes on in terms of analytics. But when you really go down to that kind of very operational analytics, you could say, well, yes, it could still sit in the finance organization, but a finance professional wouldn't have any competence or capability to actually add to that, basically just having some high level thoughts on it. So how do you see these two teams or functions, however big the company is? Are they in competition today in companies, or are they working together? How do you see this dynamic work?
I think, unfortunately, a lot of times they may be in competition because it goes back to the objectives and the leader too. So if the objectives haven't been made clear for what these two teams are doing, I don't need to tell you there's going to be some conflict and questioning about why do two teams exist rather than just one team in finance to manage this. I think and leadership doesn't need to be the director of the group. It could be the person on the team being a leader, reaching out, hey, let's have a weekly sync. What project are you working on? What projects am I working on? Typically, if the company has evolved to have these two teams, there's actually enough work for everyone. So it really doesn't matter organizationally where you sit. But I think that alignment and that, whether it's over Zoom or whether you're in office and at the physical meeting, a touch base between the analytics and data science teams is really helpful, I found, just for information sharing and whether it's business objectives or actually tactically. I found this tool to work really well and I found this method to work really well. And I think that what you just mentioned, there's the spectrum of data science that could be categorized more as engineering. And then there's a spectrum that could be categorized more as business analytics and finance. And so I think it's up to each company, depending on their leadership, their executive team, where they draw the line on where the teams live. And if you do have multiple data-focused teams, just being clear about the objective of each team and having a good camaraderie among the team.
Yeah, I can definitely see that making a big difference. And for me, it's all about ensuring that from a company perspective, we prioritize the analytical resources that we have available in the company to go towards the biggest pain points that we have as a company right now, rather than saying, hey, we have two groups that are, they both know about the same problem, but they're not working together. So they are competing about being first with insight that can help make better decisions, which is obviously very inefficient way to run the companies. So that's why from my perspective, again, of course, I'm in finance, I'm biased, but having the CFO, for instance, because it's could be, at least not saying it's always like that, could also be CTO in tech companies, of course, but it's often the most data literate person on the executive team. Then it just makes sense that the analytics efforts in the company is housed there. But obviously, if you're in a tech company, it could be very much, much different. So really loving those nuances that you're sharing there, Rose. So obviously you've left corporate life, you've left the finance function to start your own company. Why don't you tell our listeners a bit more about how do you apply what you learn in data analytics today to create this new business, and maybe also just talk about what is this new business all about?
Yeah, so data science and analytics are very much a part of what I'm doing today. So when I was in finance, whether it's VP finance role, manager role, eventually a CFO role, your job, you're the investor in the company, right? Like you're pouring your resource, you're doing all this data science and analytics, and you're looking at different parts of the teams. And you're pouring resources into parts of the company that are efficient and scalable. Meaning if you pour resources there, you actually get more stuff out. Usually it's revenue, sometimes other objectives for different types of companies. And I believe that finance and the finance profession are in a spot to really make unparalleled impact on the business. If you think about it, finance is the only team that is sitting across the data for the entire organization. I'm not saying marketing is not important. I'm not saying product's not important. All these teams are important. But by definition, they are optimizing their function. right? They're not optimizing across the whole company. And so what I saw in my own experience was that finance professionals are sort of being underutilized, not because they're not busy, they're plenty busy, but because there are so many basic elements in the job that still required manual pivoting, manual filtering. And so there was a lot of copy and pasting still working down at the data set level that took up a lot of time. And that prevented these professionals from really getting to that strategic level. And I think, you know, as we're talking about scalability, like there's a lot of impact these strategic finance people can make on a company. One example here, as I was working through, like it's the business partner. If you want to have a good business partnership, you have to communicate the financial data relevant to that department to that business partner. And so how do you curate that data set? Well, sometimes you have to go into your GL, dump it, get a pivot of it, create a new workbook because of permissioning and all that. And then maybe even screenshot that into a deck because they're not as familiar with Excel. So there's all this pivoting that needs to be done to enable successful business partnerships and data sharing. And those pivots are really queries, like they're data analytics queries. They're grouped by different dates. They're grouped by different GL or accounts or whatnot. And so what we're building is essentially a technology stack to automate some of those queries and to make it visually pleasing and easier with the modern UI and digital interface to really accelerate some of the business partnering opportunities that FP&A and strategic finance teams can do. I think in addition to that, I really believe in this compound strategy where today, like, why is your vendor procurement intake tool a different tool than your budgeting tool? Why can't you just request against the budget and turn that into a PO and pay that? And so that everything is linked and you really have more insights into things that are outstanding, not just your accounting actuals when you're doing the reforking. So that's where we're on a journey to do. And we're about a year and a half in. We have a few dozen customers and continue to make hopefully more progress, really just to empower the finance teams. I'm really a huge fan of finance and I see the pain and I see technology being able to help it.
Absolutely. And just going back to the beginning of what you said there, Rose, that finance professionals are in a unique position. And we are, you know, we call it the BBI, we call it the unfair advantage of finance, right? Because you put everything we have together in terms of the capabilities and the organizational position, no one else in the company has that. And if we're not leveraging that, companies, you know, I'm not saying the individual finance professional, but companies are losing a big opportunity. So I really love the work that you're doing there, trying to empower the finance professionals to use that position that they have to actually bring unique insights to the table and empower decision-making for business leaders. So it's a great mission that you have there. So we've talked about the finance versus the analytics and you shared your great story and your experience and the value creation examples. Are there any final thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners on this topic?
Yeah, this has been a great conversation. One thing I'll leave everyone with is finance, data science, analytics. This is a one-way trend. There is going to be more data science, more analytics. It's here to stay. It's not a fad. And I'm really excited for the next decade or so of this profession and the impact on finance teams. And like you mentioned, like the company, right? It's not just the finance teams. It's really where the company is going and how finance can really lead the company in that way. And I think it's important to have fun in that journey. There's going to be a lot of data, a lot of things to do, but have fun as well.
Great stuff. There you have it. It's a one-way trend. And remember to have fun. Rose, I definitely had fun with this conversation here and learning so many great stories. And I'm sure our listeners will have fun with those stories too. Thanks so much for joining the Hashtag Finance Master podcast. I'll definitely be following your journey closely and see how you can help finance professionals become business partners as we really just trying to help them become. And thanks a lot for being here today. Thanks everyone for listening to the Hashtag Finance Master podcast. And we will see you again next week. So bye for now.
You've been listening to Hashtag Finance Master, a weekly show recorded live on LinkedIn Audio. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest trends in finance and accounting. And why not join Anders every Thursday on LinkedIn to share your own views and appear in the next episode?